You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
All right, you sipped. You wet your whistle.
My whistle is wet.
You are wet, wild, and ready to talk.
Yeah, it is wet.
About old games.
Oh, did you start?
Old games don't make you wet sufficiently that you need to drink more.
Are we bantering now?
We all need to drink more. Yeah, this is banter. I hit record, so this is just top of the podcast banter.
You know, I can never tell because on Joe's podcast, mm-hmm. sometimes I think he will have started and that we're doing the banter thing, but he actually hasn't started recording and we were just bantering for no fucking reason.
Well, that's why I pointed at you.
I gave
you the silent 3-2-1 point. That's how you that's to indicate that we should start
all the banter. Right. Let's go. Hey, hello there, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey.
Welcome to Fat Gatsby's. Fat Gatsby's Backlog of the Year podcast on
Why
Game
that
Future
voice?
Past. That's us. I don't know. It's just I'm Tim, that's Dave.
Hey, that's us. That's us.
I mean, let's face it, so we recorded Blank of the Year a few days after Christmas.
Yeah.
It was all right, then it was 2021, the year has begun, and wild ride it has been through 2021. I can't believe we're already through the entire year.
Good God. It's been a hell of a year.
Oh my God. Anyway, so we do our traditional blank of the year extravaganza that is inevitably 4 hours long, apparently, and then me and Dave get together for a more intimate, smaller look at our old shit that we played.
Yeah, we're over here in our robes with sipping cognac. That's how intimate this is. So
yeah,
come and join us, won't you?
Yeah, we are ever closer to a moment in which we can be in the same room recording a podcast again.
Oh man, imagine that. Imagine you coming and spitting your own spittle onto my microphones.
God, I can't.
I don't know if I
want
to go back. Honestly,
spit my spittle everywhere. Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the history of Fat Gatsby, I think we maybe recorded early on, there was a lot of times we were in the same room.
There were. Yeah, there have been a few.
But I think feel like since then, in the past few years, this has been not so much anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So
who has the time?
Yeah.
Frankly.
But yeah, I got shot and your wife got shot. So there is our families are on their way to a safer, more secure place in 2021.
We each have one member, the one member that leaves the house the most as our chief line of defense.
Yeah, that qualifies.
Yes.
For that. My God. Yeah, so long as they have vaccines in another 3 weeks when we both need to get our second shot.
Yeah, boy, fingers crossed for that because it has been a feeding frenzy since those first couple of days.
They just canceled the Department of a bunch of cancellation. They had to cancel 2 days because the government lied about how much vaccine they had.
Thanks, guys.
One last
fuck you.
Yeah.
To New York State, I guess. Not to dwell on it too long, but Jan keeps shaking her head at me at what a shit show it's been. She's lucky that she was one of the first to get her vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
Now all of her coworkers are scrambling to even try to get an appointment a month or 2 months out. And she said, why couldn't they have done this better? Why did they do that? And I said, they probably knew it was going to be a shit show, but in the interest of public health, you got to decide, we got to get these things into people's arms anyway. We got to get them into as many people's arms as we can, even though there's going to be shortages.
Not to go completely off base, how did she get an appointment?
Ah, so we don't live in the county that she works in. That's the key. She works in the very populous Monroe County,
but you live in a
rural adjacent Wayne County. So she was able to easily get an appointment early on because there's less competition for vaccines out here. But all of her coworkers who live in the county where she works cannot because it's just too busy, crazy.
For me, it has been links to appointment making web pages that are being passed around through email through the school districts and cannot be found publicly.
Do you get like several emails a day about it? Like, try this one.
No. Well, I think I got left off our department specifically, ironically, was left off the initial email chain that went around.
Yikes.
No, that's a slight. Yeah, I talked. Well, it's more of an oversight than a slight. It's they
keep telling yourself that.
Yeah. No, well, they want us vaccinated more than anyone else in the district, because if anyone in our department gets sick, the whole department has to stay home and the department is fucked.
Oh, yeah, that'd be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, no, I think it was just they just didn't have us on that email list. And that's why. No, I just happened to be talking to a teacher who was like, oh, yeah, our union sent this around this morning. And I was like, oh, send that to me. And then I had an appointment an hour later because of timing. But that's the way it is. Wow. Like, if you go through proper channels, you will not find links to get a vaccine fucking anywhere.
Yeah.
But that seems to be by design, because just passing around these links and these registration sites among people, like, all the appointments are getting filled the fuck up.
Yeah.
So if it were public, it'd be
a nightmare.
It'd be more of a disaster. But I have been, you know, leveraging that to get that link to people who are not in the education sector that need to get, say, high risk parents vaccinated.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, boy.
So, yeah, but
not to dwell too much on the current year of 2021. Tim, we're here to talk about previous years, prior years.
Yeah. And not 2020, as a matter of fact, really. So that's the joy.
Get to spend this 2021 podcast not talking about 2020.
Yeah, we are talking about things we did in 2020, but not things we did with things that didn't come out in 2020. Old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where we try to assess the non-new games we played during 2020 and give them some credit and nods, which is always interesting. My ability, and I've mentioned this, I feel like at least last year, my ability to go through my backlog has greatly diminished since I became a guy who often reviews games with my spare time.
Oh, I see. Yes, that's true. Yes, that's true.
Instead of, you know, those moments where I'm finishing up new games and then being like, I need something to play now. I'm going to dig through my backlog and pull something out.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't so much happen. It's usually like, I'm not playing this new game because I'm reviewing some game. And that's where that time goes. And that's fine, because it is a fun thing to do.
Sure, sure. See, now it's funny you say that, because I'm looking at my list of older games that I played, and these games are in no way me clearing out my backlog. Like, none of these are older games that I've been meaning to, like, I should finally get around to playing that. Nope, none of them. Most of these are just older games that happened to come my way, a lot of them through that itch.io bundle for racial justice, which contain, you know, mostly releases from the past couple of years. And there were only a couple of games from, like, years ago that I tried out. But again, that's mostly just because they happened to be made available to me this year. Either they got re-released this year or, you know, I tried doing a lot of, like, Dolphin GameCube and Wii emulation on my PC this year. So it wasn't me clearing out my backlog, just, like, new opportunities to play. This Game Loft released a free collection of their classic games, which, like, we don't think about Game Loft. I think people our age don't think about Game Loft having, like, classics, but they've got a deep library, and you can get, like, a collection of 20, 30 of their old, like, games for Java phones. like for old, you know, flip phones on Android now. And it's cool. It's super cool to revisit this like really unique part of video game history. So yeah, just weird opportunities to check out older games. I haven't touched anything that I've been meaning to play.
Yeah, no, that's about the same, because in course of doing, well, one, just kind of by the way things go, usually my things I played that didn't come out in a current year usually ends up being a high concentration of things that came out the year before.
Yeah,
because we get through game of the year time. I hear about all these games I didn't play and should check out. And so I end up doing a lot of catch up at the beginning of the year, which is literally what I've been doing the past 2 weeks. And just playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, pretty much, and like a couple other things. But yeah, that's mostly what happens early on in the year. Or, you know, I'm picking up those games on deals and finally checking them out.
Yes, that's the other thing, is that they're cheap.
Yeah. Or, you know, at the same time, a good number of the review codes that come my way are for games that are getting ports that might have come out on PC like a few years ago.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, I'm getting my hands on
games
those
that are now available to you.
Yeah. It's like, yes, they released in 2020, but it's, you know, they've been out for a little bit somewhere, you know, phones, whatever. But now they're crossing my path and I'm reviewing them.
So, Tim, we're ditching our categories this year.
Yeah, fuck them.
Fuck them. Fuck those guys. They were weird, stupid categories anyway. Best use of butt? Come on.
That was a Weiss idea. I feel like they were better served when we were actually perhaps getting through some of our backlog.
Yeah, probably.
Whereas now it's like the, I don't know. Yeah, not so much anymore.
Yeah, I always have to stretch a bit to fit our categories, but
So we're paring things down. We're gonna do a few wild card shout outs and then just kind of run off five of the best old things we played in 2020.
Yeah.
You know?
So, Tim, beyond your top five, what else did you want to mention? Did you have a wild card award that you want, or did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Of course, I have like four or five of them.
Oh,
right.
Man. Me too.
Well, I mentioned Wilmot's Warehouse when we were doing Blank of the Year. It's something
sure
I really enjoyed. Another puzzle game that that Purnell had talked about that I really enjoyed that I did get to play was Baba Is You.
Oh, yeah. I've been meaning to play that so hard.
Which is a fucking mind fuck of a game.
Oh,
holy
man.
Shit. That rabbit hole goes deep. I did not finish it. That's fine. I still spent like 7 or 8 hours with it. I got the gist. It's weird. It's fun. It's hard.
Mm.
But it's really interesting and different than, you know, a lot of other puzzle games I've played.
Yeah, I hear there's nothing else like it. I've got it queued up, ready to try. Just
got to give it a try. Got to jump in and start watching things get weird. I want to shout out, in a negative way, Devil May Cry 5, which I didn't care for that much. Thought it was really bland, looked really bland. Gameplay was bland. Didn't like the new characters, blah, 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 blah. A shout out to 2019's Ring Fit Adventure.
Hey now.
Which I had the good sense when in hindsight was incredibly good sense. As my Gamers Club, my Best Buy Gamers Club Unlocked membership was fading into memory, a couple weekends before I was going to lose it, I blew what reward certificates I had and got 20% off for the last time a copy of Ring Fit Adventure. So I got $16 off the top of it.
Nice.
Because
that retails for what, 70?
80, I believe.
Ooh.
Yeah, 80. So I got that, and I got that at like, it was like the end of January, beginning of February.
Oh, wow.
And within a few weeks, Ring Fit Adventure would become an incredibly hot commodity
that
was selling for well over retail price, because suddenly everybody was stuck at home, including me. So I played a decent amount of Ring Fit Adventure. I need to play more Ring Fit Adventure. What it actually served me was my child has played a lot more Ring Fit Adventure than I have.
Oh, yeah. Boy, Julia loves it too.
It ended up being a huge, just, you know, in those early days of quarantine in March when it was still fucking cold out, And I needed to get this kid some physical activity. That was the thing. There was like Ring Fit Adventure Time every day. And the game is, you know, easygoing and accommodating enough that he was able to pretty easily make progress. Like he couldn't manage, you know, he had trouble managing some things in the menus and the shops and the towns. Sure. And I had to help guide him through that. But you get him into a level, you get his exercises set, and he's fine. You know?
What a great way to get those wiggles out.
Yeah, he knows to pick the colors to do more damage to the things that are the same color. He's not always the most efficient with his attacks, but you know, it's fine. You know, it's fine. He gets through. The thing is, he's really completely fucking overleveled from where he is in the game, so that helps too. And so just like with a little bit of like couch coaching, you know, fine, and that was a great, fantastic thing. And for what little bit of it I played, it seems like it's a really fun and actually a halfway decent workout. You know?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
It'll get you sweating.
Yes, yes, get you sweating. You know, when I work out at home, I alternate between like weights and like running cardio and it's only the cardio that really makes me, you know, break a real sweat. But boy, Ring Fit worked muscles I didn't know I had, you know, because they're not part of my regular routine. I wish that I had kept up with it, and I should bring it back this year.
Yeah, nothing stopping you, man. It just sucks because I have to do it like in the middle of my living room, which is not great.
It's maybe large too. Yeah,
I need to get a, well, it's like, you know, then I'm taking up kind of the main entertainment center of the house to.
Right. Exactly. To do that. Yeah.
Like, so I have some plans for moving my house around. So I'm like, I may have to get another Switch dock, but I might be able to get a good space to use it. I couldn't do it in the basement because I can't raise my hands over my head. But that was great. And I guess a shout out to something that I technically purchased and sat on my shelf for a while, which is the Dark Souls Remastered. Go figure. Ooh, nice. I loved it. I bought the trilogy at some point from Best Buy, and Gamers Club Unlocked. And it was just kind of sitting there. And then after I played Demon Souls, I was still thirsting for more. So I popped that in and did a run through it and had a great time. Still love that game. Still
great.
What
did you have that for? What did you buy that for?
I have that for PS4. So okay. I played it on my PS5.
All righty.
Yeah. Never ran on PS4. So I don't know how much better it might look on PS5, but you know, it looked as good as it did on PC, you know, whatever, like 5 years ago. It doesn't look, you can only make it look so much better than that, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it looked like that, and it's fine. Did not look as good as Demon's Souls. I will tell you that. Yeah, maybe on the next time we record a normal podcast, I'll finally get around to actually talking about owning a PS5 and all that shit, because I haven't done that yet.
In the games
I've played on it. So yeah, how about you? Wild card, play some cards.
Oh, well, you know, in addition to, like you, my early year catching up on the 2019 games, I had wonderful times with Ring Fit Adventure, Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove, The Outer Wilds, Untitled Goose Game, and of course, my 2019 game of 2020, Sayonara Wild Hearts. I also dug into, I took a little trip to Japan via the Japanese eShop on my Switch, where I was able to get the original Guilty Gear for like a dollar. There are some shenanigans that you can do when visiting other regions on the eShop. I typically don't do that because I always carry a balance on the eShop because I buy credit on Raise.com at a discount. And if you switch regions, you lose your balance. So I've never done that, but I do have a Japanese account, that I use to get like the Japanese, Nintendo Switch Online, Famicom and Super Famicom apps.
I have a European account cause sometimes our review codes come from Europe.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Interesting.
One on PS4 too. Technically I have two cause I forgot the password to one of them.
Okay. So that was the first time that I had ever played the original Guilty Gear from 1998 on PlayStation. That was a weird, wild thing to see Guilty Gear be that blocky, but still that like complete.
Yeah, it's weird. That is the weird thing about playing Guilty Gear is seeing how much was already there, I guess, before playing X. Cause that was, you know, I first played X and I played Guilty Gear at some point later. I'm like, oh, huh, this is still a lot
this
of
is
it's
still
here.
Very recognizably Guilty Gear, just at a lower resolution. Yeah, it's super weird. The game that back when we had real categories, the game I was my wild card was going to be like, why did I end up playing this game? Award goes to the 1991 Konami title Samurai Pizza Cats on Famicom, and that's because my kids started watching the cartoon Samurai Pizza Cats. We found a Roku app for my youngest to watch Hello Kitty, and it also had Samurai Pizza Cats on it. And I didn't know anything about Samurai Pizza Cats, but that is a weird show with a super weird history. When they localized it for America, they kind of just did not give a fuck. And they just like added in like weird adult like political humor, and that is a hell of a show. And the accompanying Famicom game is not quite up there with Konami's best, but it is definitely like a solid, you know, licensed Konami action platformer, right? You know, along with Ninja Turtles and Tiny Toons and the other stuff that they did for the Famicom around that vintage. So that was interesting. But my main wild card is the game. I have no other reason to talk about this game. Is it was going to be my award for best song ever, which is how we used to close out the show.
Mm-hmm.
When this year's Clubhouse Games came out for Switch, I still haven't picked it up, but I was having a little FOMO about it, so I decided to pop in my original Clubhouse Games DS cartridge from 2007, which I had never really played. I got it from like Guzex a decade ago, never played it. Now, I am one who loves a good video game solitaire, especially on the go. And this... Oh boy, Clubhouse Games has a game of Klondike Solitaire that has a song that is inimitable. It is an earworm. It is a banger. It is a hip, jazzy tune that's in a 5/4 key time signature, and it is, I love it. And I find myself playing around to Solitaire before bed just to hear this song. Oh, excuse me, a little scratchy there. Clubhouse Games 2007 is my wild card for best song ever.
Nice. Yay.
All right. So that's our extras.
Cool. Time All right, yeah.
Time to dive here, in.
Yeah, the mishmash top five of best old things we played in, in 2020.
All right. Why don't you go first? Why don't you start
yeah,
us
sure.
off?
My number five, which I think I briefly mentioned... on the blank cast is Gato Roboto.
Oh yeah,
which is a simplified Metroidvania type game where you are a cat on a space station who can jump into a giant robot suit, but you can also jump out of the robot suit, so it has a little bit of Blaster Master in there. Because the cat is how you get through small tight corridors as if you were a ball rolling around. But yeah, you're a cat in this mech suit, and you're trying to stop a scientist who's downloaded his brain into like an evil rat mouse thing. It's very silly and goofy. But yeah, it's all black and white. It's pretty, you know, simple, straightforward. You get into the station. There's three areas you have to go to repair a lift to take you into the final area, and then you finish the game. It's like 4 or 5 hours long.
Hey.
It has a few twists on it has its own ideas, I guess. It has a few of its own ideas to put in this little game space. Like your missiles are on a cooldown, like it's a meter that fills up and overheats rather than you having like an amount to shoot out. Yeah. again, you can hop out as a cat. When you're a cat, a one hit will kill you though. That's no good. Yeah, so you got to watch out for that. I think when you're a cat, you can't swim either because you're a cat and cats don't like water. But yeah, you know, it was on Game Pass and I downloaded it and played a bit of it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I came back to it and finished it. So good for you, Gato Roboto. That's actually awesome. Came back to you a month later and actually finished it and had a fun time. You know, it's not a huge commitment.
I like the screenshots that I've seen because it looks like it's got a nice lo-fi aesthetic. Is the whole thing black and white, or is it like a Game Boy kind of resolution? So how would you describe the visual aesthetic?
It's all black and white. Right. You know, it's crisp and clear. I guess you could say it is Game Boy like. You can find different color palettes to swap on throughout the game. Okay. That is a thing. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, well, it makes me want to try that.
You should try it.
Another one I got queued up in my Steam.
I was about to say, it's cheap. It is rarely expensive.
Yeah.
And if you have Game Pass, it's right there, man.
Nice.
so check it out. You can burn an afternoon on that game. All right. And you, sir.
My number five is a little indie title that you have probably seen on sale on the Nintendo Switch eShop. It's called Pan Pan, and I think I must have just grabbed it when it was on sale for $1. So this was a game that I believe launched with the Switch, or at least it came out near launch back in 2017, mm-hmm. and it is an adventure game. Specifically, it's an isometric adventure game that feels like it cribs a lot of its visual aesthetic from the mobile hit Monument Valley from six or seven years ago. Time flies. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Monument Valley came out. Monument Valley is probably pretty old by now. But it is, as opposed to Monument Valley, which is sort of a, you know, like level by level puzzle game, Pan Pan is it's a graphical adventure game without a GUI. So it was really, really easy for my kids to grok how to, you know, since there are no verbal commands, everything is purely visual and you have to sort of, you know, suss it out. So there's a nonverbal story going on. You're stranded on a planet and you have to find spaceship parts. It was a, you know, it is a perfectly clever adventure game that certainly made me scratch my head at a lot of points. You know, so it was not unchallenging, but it is also kind of a model of wonderful minimalist simplicity in that it was easy enough for my kids to grasp and they really, really wanted to see it through to the end. And we had a fantastic time and got way more than our $1 worth out of Pan Pan. So next time it goes on sale on the eShop and it's near the top of the list because it's at some ridiculous price, take this as a hearty recommendation. It's a good one. Surprise, you know, it can be hard to find a good. There's so much crap on the eShop. Pan Pan is worth the time. Pan Pan is a quality piece of software. Pan Pan.
Probably number better five. For you to just look it up and put it on your wish list and then check it.
You can do that.
Week. Yeah, that's what I do. Is I check my wish list every week just to see what's on sale.
Yep, same.
Which a lot of weeks it's the same things. It's like, oh yeah, that Downwell is just permanently $2.50.
So you should get it. Downwell's never going to be cheaper. Just get it. Just get Downwell.
Yeah, I played it on PC or maybe on my phone. I have played Downwell before.
I played it on Vita.
All right. Number four, I am going to talk about a game called Streets of Rogue.
Ooh, hey, okay, yeah.
Streets of Rogue, which is not like Streets of Rage.
Yes.
It is not like that. So it is a... Well, in the way in which I experienced it, is a multiplayer roguelike, which I played with a couple other people, where the object is to make it through this city and kill the mayor, so that you will become the mayor, and you pick there's different
kill the mayor, become the mayor.
Yeah, kill the mayor, becomes the mayor. So become the mayor. So there's different classes that you pick from. So each person in your party, in your group, will pick a different class, which has different abilities, and, you know, different strengths and weaknesses. You'll go out into a level and like it drops you into these, they're, you know, it's roguelike. So it's randomly generated and kind of like little miniature open worlds. And you will have some like global objectives you need to fulfill, and then you'll have some character objectives to fulfill as well.
Okay.
Like I think like a thief has to like pick a certain amount of locks or something like that. It's been a while since I played it, but I remember that's one of them. Like, if you're like an assassin, you need to kill like a certain amount of people, stuff like that. But it's just, you know,
so this is a game that also goes on sale all the time, yeah, and can be had for fairly cheaply. And so I see it all the time and almost think like, oh, is that a brawler? Oh no, that's not a brawler. I don't know.
No, it is not a brawler.
And so I always,
it's hard to say exactly what it is, but it, I would say it is a multiplayer game, more than anything.
Okay.
So yeah, you move around these overhead levels, and I guess that kind of makes it a little bit like classic GTA, mm-hmm, when that was still overhead.
Okay.
But you know, you go through these levels, all hell can break loose depending, you know, because there's cops that you don't want to alert. Mm. Sometimes there's, you know, areas that are restricted do you get into. There's like traps. Different things will cause different trouble, basically. Like, you know, you can break windows, but that might alert cops nearby, or it might alert like guards in the building. But if you can get in and out, then you don't have to go through all the traps that might be laid out in front of that. It also gets weird, in that there's like there can be ghosts and zombies and werewolves, and shit like that. And it was just a really fun time. You know, there's different guns to find, different upgrades to get. You can revive your party members if they get smoked.
Did you play with people you know or with strangers?
No, with people I know.
All right.
Yeah, with people from my usual gaming group. It's so weird, but it's a ton of fun, and there's just like a lot of different stuff going on with it. Like a lot of good, you know, randomness to keep things interesting, and then you unlock more characters and can try different characters as you go through.
It's got stellar review scores. I'm looking it up right now. People love this game.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun playing with other people. I can't imagine it's nearly as fun playing by yourself.
Never is.
It never is. So, yeah.
That's
Streets of Rogue. Streets of Rogue. Oh, that was a 2019 game. It was in early access for a long time before that.
Yeah, it was in early access since 2017, it says.
Yeah, so I had had it on like my wish list forever, and then all of a sudden, like, people I knew picked it up and were playing it. I was like, oh shit, now is the time. Now is the time.
Awesome.
All right. Yeah.
That's
interesting. All right. Go on then.
Yeah. My number four is Natsume's Wild Guns for Super Nintendo.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I know. I swear I've tried Wild Guns at some time in the past and just didn't. Like, I was like, fuck this Crosshairs pointing game. No. But Wild Guns was released for Nintendo Switch Online this year. And it finally clicked with me. Because I've always been curious about the remake, which, you know, is high resolution and widescreen and made by the original dev team. But, you know, I wasn't sure if I really dug the Wild Guns concept. But this is the time. This was the year that I finally just sat down with Wild Guns and I finally got it. I finally got, like, you know, the objectives and the way enemies attack you and the sort of how you sort of need to be a little strategic about the order in which you tackle things. And because it's so funny. I spent a lot of time playing Terminator 2, the arcade game, on my Sega Game Gear, like way too much time at 10 or 11 years old, manipulating a crosshair with a D-pad, you know, in what was supposed to be an arcade light gun game. And I think doing that as an adult, I sort of, you know, acquired like a disdain for that kind of game. But I mean, it's a thing. So Wild Guns was actually going to be, back when we had categories, it was going to be my product of its time, because that's such an anachronism today. A game where you just move a crosshairs with your directional pad or analog stick around a screen in a shooting gallery. Like, that, there's no reason for that to exist anymore, because there's no light guns anymore. We don't have shooting gallery games anymore. But Wild Guns is like, now that I get it, I see how it's so much more than that and how it's totally its own thing. Like, it takes that basic template, but makes it its own thing and makes it a thing that actually makes sense. And it's super crazy and super fun and just, you know, totally 100% Natsume weirdness. And I love it now. So I'm so glad that I gave another shot to Wild Guns. Thanks, Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah. And, you know, I have an ongoing bone I like to pick, because whenever Nintendo unveils more games for the online service, which is not often enough. Just going to say they should be doing those like monthly. They should be. I feel like they should be able to get a couple games up there.
Yeah. You know, and more consoles, too.
And not like quarterly. And here's like three games, you know, I feel is pretty trash.
Yeah.
But, you know, I digress. There's never not been room for lots of criticism in Nintendo's online approach to anything. But the thing is, when they do announce those games, like, I inevitably look at the mentions on Twitter and just see people being like, duh, where's Earthbound? Where's Chrono Trigger? Where's this game? Where's Mario RPG? Where's Donkey Kong Country? Which they can shut up about now since all fucking three of them are on there. You're there. Thanks, guys. But it's like, for me, I am more interested in this random stuff that they put on there that, you know, I might have never played or certainly don't own or at least haven't touched in 20 years. It's like, I have played Earthbound. Y'all have played fucking Earthbound. Don't act like you haven't. You don't need it. You need stuff you haven't played before.
You need Operation Logic Bomb.
Seriously. No, seriously. I want to check out Operation Logic Bomb.
Oh, it was super weird. It's worth playing once.
You know what? Yeah. Like I want to look at that stuff. I want to. Fuck right. I am so glad that they put so many like Japanese releases on there, like the original Japanese paneled upon.
Yeah.
Like that is more interesting to me than just having
Picross.
Yeah, Picross. Like that is so much more interesting to me than
just playing the hits.
Like than just like, oh yeah, here's Donkey Kong Country 2, which I've played and I'm not going to play it again at this time. Yeah. Maybe I'll play 3. I didn't finish 3. Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a reason why. But yeah, I appreciate that stuff that they put on there.
I appreciate it, too. I guess I wouldn't mind if they took sort of a balanced approach of like, here's one major mainstream hit and then a couple of oddballs.
Yeah, which That'd is be usually nice. Kind of what they do.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So next.
So what's your number three?
What is my number three? My number three is a fantastic beat-em-up called Fight and Rage.
Oh, we have talked about Fight and Rage at length. And it, you know what? It's currently on sale on the eShop. It's $12. Should this be the time? Is now the time?
Yeah, sure. It doesn't really seem to get cheaper.
Yeah,
Which is like I sat on it for a long time, and then I don't know. I don't remember whether it was before or after Streets of Rage 4 that I picked it. I think it was before. Because I think Purnell had been talking about it.
Okay.
And yeah, that is a fun, grungy, like combo-y, bloody, like arcade-y beat 'em up. It's just like, you know, I went in there as like the big Minotaur character who is pretty slow and has the most limited moveset. I found the other characters to be a lot more fun to play as.
Okay.
Because they have more moves and you can... I was having an easier time pulling off more combos. But it's just... It's a fun thing where you have these, you know... It's humans against mutant animal characters. And I think the mutant animals are like these oppressive overlord type things. But there's just like something about like the look of it.
Almost like a super deformed kind of look.
Yeah, but it looks like, you know, it's not super clean, I guess I should say.
Okay.
Like, it's a little pixely, like the it looks a little bit rough, you know, it's...
In a good way, you're saying.
Yes. Whereas, and I'm not saying it's bad that the characters in, like, Streets of Rage 4 are very, like, clean, you know, and very clear, but that is that style, and this is this style, where it looks more pixelated. It looks more like something you'd see in an arcade in the 90s. Like, the levels are, generally speaking, a lot darker. It's pretty gory.
Like, the color scheme, the whole thing kind of reminds me of Battletoads a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably, you got, like, monster pig characters that you're beating up and shit like that.
Yeah, just from an aesthetic perspective.
Yeah, and there's a lot of options in there for, like, messing with it as well. But, yeah, it really scratched a fun beat-em-up itch, and is a few years old. So, man, I got to a game that was, like, a few years old. Good on me. But, yeah, I definitely recommend it is kind of, I feel like, flown under the radars and beginning buzz for, like, years now.
Yeah.
And you'll hear beat-em-up enthusiasts being like, no, you got to check out this Fight and Rage thing. And I finally did, and I loved it.
Excellent. Yeah, it's one of, like, many games that are on. See, I treated myself to a couple games over the holiday sale, and now, like, the other half of my wish list is on sale. So, but I haven't even started the games that I bought from the holiday sale yet, so I'm feeling bad about buying more. But I know I should probably pick it up.
Hey, you know, it'll be on sale again at some point, or maybe this will be the game that you start up immediately. Maybe this will be that one.
Maybe it's been on my wish list since the first time you and I talked about it months ago, and it has not been on sale since.
Oh,
yeah, seems kind of rare that any significant discount comes in, so maybe I should jump on it.
Maybe.
All right.
Okay.
My number three. And this is my first entry on my list from the itch.io bundle for racial justice.
Mm-hmm.
Sky Rogue.
I think I have this downloaded. I think it is on my external drive, ready to be checked. I do. Yes, I recognize this game. All right. Go on.
Yeah. Sky Rogue is a procedurally generated air combat game. It's Namco's air combat / Ace Combat. Procedurally generated. You know, anytime you see, like, oh, hey, here's some little indie company doing a procedurally generated take on X old established franchise that hasn't seen a real great new installment in a while, the first thing you always wonder is, like, well, how does it control? Like, you know, does it handle as well as the game that it's obviously cribbing from? And praise the gods, the first thing I can say about Sky Rogue is that it flies like a dream. Like, it is, it's simple, intuitive, arcade dogfighting action. It was exactly what I wanted it to feel like, and it gives you, like, lots of view options. It gives you third person outside the plane. It gives you in the cockpit view if you want that, but I personally find that disorienting. So, you know, all the, I haven't played a lot of flight sims. It's not something I can really get into, but, you know, the few, like, dogfighting simulations that I like that have sort of a more basic arcadey intuitive control screen. I'm thinking, you know, Rogue Leader on GameCube.
You're thinking of less simmy things.
Less simmy things. Yes, this is an arcadey flight sim, easy to pick up and play, very basic controls, intuitive. Clear level goals on each level that still require you to sort of, you know, plan out your, because even the arcadey flight sims like Namco's Ace Combat series still require you to sort of, like, you know, bank your plane well and, like, do big fly arounds so that you can sort of plan your approach if you need to blow up something that's low on the horizon, or you know, just tracking an enemy, tracking a bogey that's, like, trying to evade you and stuff. It is all that good, great stuff with, you know, the common roguelite elements that you would expect. Permanent upgrades to your plane when you complete missions and earn money that you can spend. It's great. It was a super fun surprise that I had no idea existed before that bundle came out, and I just had a ton of fun with it. Sky Rogue. Tim, what's your number two?
All right, number two.
Moving right along.
All right, I have bundled many games into number two. Because it is, it is a bundle of games, the Castlevania Anniversary Collection.
Okay. So, I'll allow it.
Well, here's the deal, because finally last year in the middle of the summer, I went on a massive Castlevania kick. And of course I have played, you know, all the old classic Castlevanias at some point or another. However, I have not, the only one that I ever had finished was Castlevania 2 of all the ones to finish.
Okay.
And you know, Rondo in that its various releases, I did finish Rondo, but you know, here to up until last year, I had not played through the entirety of Castlevania 1, Castlevania 3, Castlevania 4, or Vampire Killer, a.k.a. Bloodlines. And as it turned out, I had barely played fucking any of Bloodlines.
Oh, yeah. No, me like, too.
Apparently, I had only played, like, the first stage.
the stages are long in that game.
So, I played Bloodlines after I played Castlevania 4, and Bloodlines is positively breezy compared to Castlevania 4.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Partially, I mean, like, Bloodlines is six stages.
It is
six stages. So like, yeah, the stages are of decent length, but when you talk about Castlevania 4, which has a lot more than that, like three times as many.
And they go on and on and on.
And they can go on. They have multiple parts. It's like, Jesus Christ. You know, I mean, like, it's like four or five stages just to get to the eponymous Castlevania in Castlevania 4, you know? And then you get in the castle, and then it's a bunch more stages inside the castle. And, you know, so Bloodlines was very refreshing because it was just a straight up, like, six stages, like, you know, pretty straightforward Castlevania action.
Yeah.
Hard, but, I mean, they're all fucking hard. But it was really satisfying to go back and play all those games and see them through to the end and actually, like, notch the completions on them, you know. I don't know. I might like Bloodlines a little more than Castlevania 4, kind of just for that breeziness. I was like so exhausted with Castlevania 4.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I've played so much of the first like seven or eight levels of Castlevania 4, you know, that they can get a little bit dull.
But you know, for people like us that we're just so familiar with it, and yeah, Bloodlines is definitely a breath of fresh air by comparison. Yeah.
But you know, of course, the star of the show, as ever, is Castlevania 3, which, you know, the reason I kind of the entire reason I bought the Castlevania Anniversary Collection is because I had been playing, I had gotten the Contra Anniversary Collection at some point, like pretty much right after it came out, because I wanted to play some Contra. And that collection, the Contra collection, had all the Japanese versions of the games on it. So I was like, oh, I bet the Castlevania collection is the same situation, which is, you know, important because that would mean it's the only U.S. release of the legendary original Castlevania 3 soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which has that those extra layers of music in them. So I got to play that for the first time.
Awesome.
And enjoy that music firsthand in the game for the first time. And that was awesome. And Castlevania 3 is still fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That game is so good. It is so cool. It has such great music. It's not as hard in the end as it was in my head.
Hmm.
You know, I didn't own it. As a kid, I didn't own it until, you know, we were raiding good old Tom's Bargain Stop.
Same.
Yeah. I didn't own it till then. So I didn't really have those that situation you had when you were seven or eight years old and you got a game and that was the game you had for the next 4 months. So it was what your ass was going to fucking play.
Yeah.
In that situation, I'm sure I would have gotten through it. But as it was, by the time I got it with, you know, while I was buying it there with like probably 10 other old cartridges that are now worth like $50 a piece, you know, I put it in, played a few levels. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. I have Castlevania 3 now. And then it kind of hung out on the shelf and I never really committed to it.
Yeah.
You know, I think I had made it as far as getting to the castle. You know, I had gone down the three paths, tried out the different characters, but I hadn't really you know, made an effort to get through the end of that game. And I did. And that game is, that's a great game. Mm. That is a great game with a great soundtrack. And for no other reason, you should check out that Castlevania Anniversary Collection so you can get that version of the game. But, you know, also there's, you know, some other Castlevanias on there you can check out as well. Has Kid Dracula on there.
That's the the first domestic release of the NES, of the Famicom Kid Dracula. Yeah.
I had the Famicom version for a while.
Oh.
But sold it because it was worth more money than I felt like having on my shelf.
Yeah.
And it has like the Game Boy ones are on there as well.
Yeah.
You know, 1 through 4 plus Bloodlines plus Japanese versions. Pretty solid. I feel like those collections didn't get a ton of fanfare when they came out, but they, for the fact that they're usually on sale or you can get them on sale for like $10.
Yeah.
That's well fucking worth it.
They are currently at their lowest price on the Switch eShop. They have been $5 each on other platforms, but right now is the first time they have ever been $5 on the Switch eShop.
God,
so
damn,
if you don't have all three of those, go get those now.
I already own all three of them.
Yeah. I grabbed all three of them on Switch when they were 10 each.
And they
are great. I think they're excellent collections. You know, the only gripes that people had with the Castlevania one in particular was for the games that it didn't include. And
where's Rondo? Really,
They got to make their money releasing their standalone hits.
Is Haunted Castle on there?
Yes.
Maybe, yeah.
I think it is.
So,
My only quibble about those collections, and it's such a stupid minor quibble that I don't feel like I should complain. Yet here we are, is that I wish there was a way to scale the games up to 1080p and fill the entire screen with pillar, not gross widescreen, but at least with pillar boxes. What they max out at a windowed 720 when you play on your TV in order to get the pixels to scale perfectly. When you play it undocked on portably on your Switch, it fills the entire screen, which is great. But when you play it on TV, it is always windowed and there's no option to force it. You know, sometimes I don't mind slightly distorted pixels if it means I get a larger image. So I wish that they had made that an option at least. But other than that, these collections are excellent.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I can let you name a compilation as your number two because my number two is also a suite of related games. My number two is all of the old Doom re-releases that Bethesda has released since last year. Specifically, I'm talking about Doom, Doom 2, Doom 3, and Doom 64. These games also go on sale pretty frequently, but even when they don't, they are just dirt cheap. And you can, I believe they're like $5 each at the max. So you can get all four of them for less than $20. Any old time. And I know that obviously it's been easy to emulate the original Doom on anything for years, but
it's a meme, really.
It's a meme. These are the first like official re-releases in a number of years. And at first they were kind of janky and messy, but patches have since fixed them and improved them like to perfection. These are some of the best ways to experience these original games. I had never played Doom 2 or 3. I'd played the original Doom in several different formats over the years, but I'd never tried 2 or 3. 3 in particular, it's weird for a reason, but again, it's $5. So get all four of them and give it a try. I believe I talked about Doom 64 on our Blank of the Year and what a masterpiece that game turned out to be. It is revered, you know, by a select cult. You know, it's got this underground status, and it's so well deserved. And
feels like that game like had a bit of a redemption arc. Like nobody gave a shit about it for like 10 years, and then some people were like, "Wait a second, this Doom over here,
this Doom over here. Hang on, you ain't
hold on.
This Doom over here is the shit.
Doom over here that nobody has played because it was on Nintendo 64."
Doom 64 in particular has been like lovingly restored and remastered by Night Dive Studios. The other three, you know, Doom 3 doesn't get much. You know, it was an Xbox release, and I believe it's reproduced accurately here with a resolution bump and a solid frame rate. The original two games have full native widescreen now with 60 frames per second, which is the smoothest Doom experience. It's the best frame rate I've ever gotten to play the original two games at. These are just amazing remasters, and because they are so cheap and because they're a selection of some of the best slash important slash at least an interesting curiosity with Detour with Doom 3. These were going to be my games everybody should play category, because they are really important parts of gaming history. They are still super amazing games to this day. And this is actually some of the best ways to play them.
Never played an old Doom game.
Really?
Yeah, the only Doom I've ever played was Doom 2016. I never played.
Really?
Yeah.
Not you're saying never, like not just back in the day, but like never?
Never.
Wow.
I don't think I've ever actually played fucking like original Doom or Doom 2 or Doom 64 or whatever.
Fucking original Doom is revelatory. I've said this on the podcast before. I never played it at the time. In fact, I poo-pooed it a little bit for being like, oh, it's this like edgelord PC game. They think it's so cool, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I played Wolfenstein, so...
Yeah, okay. I you know, Doom is a better game than Wolfenstein.
Sure.
Doom, like, I see now how Wolfenstein is a, you know, significant technological first step forward, but Doom is... While I think at the time I poo-pooed Doom because the whole thing seemed like a bit of a novelty, just the concept of these 3D graphics, I don't know why that felt like a novelty to me, but I see now that Doom is, it's a masterclass in game design. It really is. Every little decision that it makes, that's why essays and books have been written about it, because it is a brilliantly designed game. It really is that damn good. So I'm so glad that I turned around on it over the years. You know, and Doom 64 is this amazing, like, lost rendition of that concept that is brilliant in its own right. And the fact that these games can be had in a, they are excellent now. Upon release, they were buggy and they were not good. Now they are perfect. They're better than perfect. And they're super cheap, which is like the best thing Bethesda could have done. Just make this game available, make it on every platform, make it super cheap so that people don't need to pirate it anymore. They did a good thing. Mm. They did a good thing, and you should reward them for it by buying all the Dooms. at some point. Yeah, great. Yeah.
Well, it's like whenever I am thinking of playing a first-person game on consoles, or even on PC as well, I am just always rolling the dice with my motion sickness as to whether I'm going to be able to play it at all, which sucks. And it seems way worse than it used to be. Way more of a dice roll. You used to like, you know, in the heyday of the 360 era when like everything was fucking first person.
Yeah.
It felt like that I played, you know, but your BioShocks, your Half-Life 2s, your Darknesses and Left 4 Dead, like all those games.
Yeah.
Used to play like a ton of first person shit. But now it's like, man, I just never know. I just never know. Like, if it's going to have something that'll set me off.
Grab the original on Switch. Yeah. Grab it on Switch because it's a great Switch game. It's a great game to hold in your hands. And you know, I mean, the fact
not,
that
not it, super expensive,
it's not
so,
super
know.
Expensive. So I give it a try, especially because it is classic Doom and thus your view only moves along the X and Y axis. There's looking up and looking down.
True.
And it's 60 frames per second, which is definitely better for the higher frame rate is better for motion sickness than lower frame rate. The original Doom might be one to try. Might not be so bad.
Nice. Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Let's bring it home. Here we go. What's the best old game you played last year, Tim?
the best old game I played last year, which I unfortunately haven't finished and I've been thinking about more, since a lot of people are lumping it in with general 2020 releases, but it's a couple years old, and that game is CrossCode.
Oh, man!
Nelly!
CrossCode is also on sale right now, and I'm like almost about to buy it. Should I buy it?
I mean, it was the best old game I played last year. It's incredible. Even though I've been just sitting here thinking, I'm like, I've been thinking about it for 6 months because I reviewed it back in July, and it is on Game Pass. Though, you know, I got a code, so the game has been secured. Yeah, I played like 20 to 30 hours of it. I played a bunch of it, finished, you know, did you know, my review at that time, and then kept playing it. So this game is just like this amazing love letter to your 16-bit RPGs, or 16-bit era. Like crossing over from Super Nintendo to early PlayStation.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, you look at a screenshot, that's what it looks like, except that, you know, there's no slowdown in this game. This game, you know, it fucking moves. So you have action. It's an action RPG. It's real-time combat. It's not turn-based. So, like, you are dashing around. You have, like, distance attacks. You have melee attacks. You eventually get elemental attacks to go along with it. It is a game that takes place within a game.
Yeah.
Like, you're in an MMO. You are in a fake MMO playing an avatar that apparently has no player associated with it. So that's kind of the mystery to the story. But the other characters you're interacting with are, you know, real people just playing through their avatars, you know?
Yeah.
You explain it, it sounds kind of hokey, but they really make it work, I think, through the kind of the strength of the writing and not making it seem stupid.
Yeah. No, that's good to know. That's the thing. I've never actually heard that concept, because it is kind of a silly sounding concept, but I've never heard anyone complain about it.
Yeah. So you're in this game. But, you know, you get, you know, quests to move around. You know, sometimes it's like, go here, collect that thing. You know, all kinds of side quests. Like, the environments have a lot of verticality to them. In that you'll go into an area, but there's like cliffs you can jump up and over and around to find hidden secrets and caves and stuff. Like, the game is very dense with stuff in all the areas that you're in. There's lots of materials to collect for crafting and stuff. Like, you can get really, really in the weeds in this game. And that's something I try not to do when I'm playing games these days. Is I try to be very careful about getting in the weeds. It's only a handful of games where I look at my to-do list and I'm like, okay, I can do all of that stuff. and this is not one of them, and that's fine. But there's this whole setup where you're going around the overworld. You eventually start getting like a couple party members that can follow you around and help you in combat. You know, you're completing these little quests, going from town to town. You're leveling up as like a big, you know, skill grid to unlock more stuff. But then there are fucking dungeons in this game with like, and then suddenly it becomes Zelda, and that you're in these dungeons that have very Zelda like puzzles. You play through about half of them, then you'll get your new element, and then guess what you need to use to do a bunch of puzzles in the second half of the dungeon? It's that element. And some of them are hard, like they are devious with some of these puzzles, but it's just like, it all works so well, and the music is great, and the graphics are great, and the animations are great, and the story is good, and the writing is good. And it's really something else as a game. Excuse me. Man, but yeah, so,
yeah, I wondered where the Zelda. I mean, just
that's where it is.
Okay, because I had had an acquaintance, like a professional acquaintance, who whenever I meet someone else in the biz who also is like a gamer, we always like, oh hey, let's talk about this. You know, that's it's always extra nice. And he was telling me about CrossCode, you know, some months and months ago, and he was comparing it to Zelda, and I wondered if his assessment was kind of a surface level assessment, because I mm-hmm. knew that it was an overhead and action RPG, and I was like, is that the depth to which it's like Zelda? Because if so, I'm not sure if I'm, you know, down with that. But so that's good to know that the dungeons are real nice and Zelda-y.
Yeah, outside of the dungeons, it does not feel as Zelda-y.
Okay.
You know, it just felt like a good overhead. Like, you know, I guess it didn't really have a direct analog other than the aesthetic of what it looked like.
Right.
It was just kind of like, okay, yeah, this looks like that era of game, but it doesn't really play especially like any of them that come to mind. But then as soon as you get into the dungeon, it's like, oh no, this is very Zelda-y here. Mm. That is where the Zelda comes into play. And the game can be hard, but it definitely it has options for making shit easier. And I would don't be afraid to use them, because at a certain point I was just like, I gotta get through this fight, man.
Oh, wow.
I gotta beat this boss.
Okay.
Well, it's like you can just tweak the damage down by like 10% at a time, and you can do it for a fight and then turn it back up. Like, oh, if you're just stuck on something.
Interesting. Okay.
You can tweak the damage down, get past it, and then raise it back up. But you know, you bring the game to your level or whatever you're comfortable with. Because, I mean, at this point, you know, I there are some games that I want to be hard, but there's some times when I just want to
get through it. And
I want to get through and stuff. Yeah. And it depends. And I'll tweak things a lot more along the way. Like in Assassin's Creed, I actually just turned up the difficulty.
Yeah.
Because I was just mowing through combat, and I'm like, this is just fucking boring, and I'm going to kill myself if I just have to. It's like, no, let's turn up the heat a little bit and make this a little more dangerous for myself. But yeah, CrossCode, I think people have been buzzing about it quite a bit, but it should not be slept upon. I guess the Switch version has a little bit of slowdown in places.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Kind of a bummer. Might be better to play it on a more powerful system.
Yeah, but I'd like it to be portable.
Guess what? Yeah, right? Portable can make a big difference in the amount of time that someone has to actually pour into a game. So, yeah, CrossCode, check it out.
That is, well, I think after we wrap up this podcast, I'm going to be grabbing my Switch, heading to the eShop, and buying a couple games tonight. I tell you what, man. Walmart had a price mistake.
Oh, yeah. I was literally just about to say that. Hang on. Was this the thing on the $70 code?
Yeah. Card? Well, I noticed I missed out on both price mistakes. The one from yesterday about Toad's, Captain Toad's treasure tracker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this was the Walmart $70 for 50, which that would have been great.
That I got, so I actually have 70 crisp dollars sitting in my eShop account right now.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
Well,
if it had happened before the holiday sale, then I would probably have a lot more games in my backlog right now, but I don't, so.
Oh, man. All right. Well, CrossCode. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I didn't know that you had such a great time with CrossCode.
Yeah, I had a great time. Yeah.
All right. Well, that seals the deal
for me.
That's
why we got to do this podcast, so I can sit down and remember these games I played. So many great ones.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number one is another discovery from the itch.io bundle for racial justice. Mm-hmm. It would have been my, you know, best humble bundle find, the category that we used to call that back when it was only humble bundle doing this kind of thing. It's a game I've talked about on the podcast earlier this year. It is a game that I've spent a lot of time sitting down and playing with my daughter. But the truth is, I kind of just want to sit down by myself and play it alone, because it's that damn good. And it's a game by one person that I never would have heard of otherwise. It is called Which Way. It is a pixel art puzzle platformer where you play as a little witch who has a magic wand and can move blocks around the level, and you have to get from the entrance to the exit. That's the core gameplay loop. What makes this game special is the feeling, and the feeling comes from it kind of being a Metroidvania. It is so all of these entrances and exits are interconnected, Some lead to others. There are sort of, you're trapped in a well. You're trying to get out of a well. So there's multiple levels of this well. And there are sometimes multiple exits to a room that lead to other rooms that can lead you around secret ways and stuff. So it's Metroidvania in that sense. You don't really have to backtrack, but you may find yourself backtracking because you get lost in this sort of, so there's no auto map. That's the other thing. The map is not as complex as your typical Metroidvania. You should be able to kind of hold the structure in your head without a map, but there are certain rooms in which a map is etched onto the wall, like in the background tiles, mm-hmm. so you can kind of regain your surroundings again and get an idea of where you need to head. But that's fine, because you also sort of know where you've been, because you'll get to a room where the puzzle has been solved. So it's that. It is just sort of the overall pixel art aesthetic that is like you are in a well, so it's kind of like you're trapped in a dark cave. And also the music. The music really captures this, some of the more lonely and haunting compositions from something like Super Metroid. It's a lot of just sort of light piano, minor key sort of stuff. So a lot of it feels like the Meridia theme, okay, or
there it is.
Lower Brinstar, I think. Just the more melancholy sections of Super Metroid. This soundtrack really, really pulls a lot of the same that attitude from. And so really, like, it's a simple game. It's a puzzle platformer. You're a witch and you have to move blocks around in the right way. But the aesthetic is just so fantastic and is it's enchanting, for lack of it. Forgive the witchy pun, but it really is. That's what's special about the game. It's a little four-person team that made the whole thing. It is so polished, such a, like, you know, just expertly professionally done product. I just fell in love with everything about it, and I love it when that happens, when a game just comes out of nowhere and you're like, everyone needs to know about this game. Why isn't everyone else talking about this game? It's so good. That's how I feel about it. It's just this weird sort of undiscovered gem. And I love it. We all loved it over here in my house. I want more people to know about it. It's called Which Way. And I think you can get it for like $4 on itch.io. Yeah. Oh, shit.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, no, I... The fuck was I gonna say? Oh, there it is. Okay,
got it. Oh god, yay. What's happening?
No, I went
did
on
the recording
itch.
Blow up?
No, I went on to itch to just verify that I had that, you know.
Okay.
I went on to itch and then I'm like, I made like a folder and I downloaded like a shitload of the games. I went through like pages upon pages of that bundle.
Yeah.
And started downloading a bunch of stuff, and then at some point was just like, I can't keep doing this.
Well, they've got a download client now.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't at first, but now they've got a real nice download client, so I've got all those games nicely organized now.
Oh, shit. Well, man, I'm going to have to fucking look into that.
Yeah. You might have to re-download things, but...
I might, but yeah. I got a big folder that I kind of did a little bit of organizing with, and I'm like, here's some stuff I got to play, here's some stuff that, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But I moved Which Way into my high-priority folder.
Oh, excellent.
When I actually get to sit down and install some of these games and check them out.
Yeah, and I have not finished it either, and that's because I kind of have to wait for my daughter. I think she'd be upset if I went and played it myself, but I really want to, because every time we sit down and play together, I just want to take the controller and do it all myself.
It's like, no, dude, no, come on, do it. Anyways, while I was on there, I remember that I had a Steam key for Mixolumia waiting for me, and now I'm just installing that. So,
all right,
that is set. You know, I should. Yeah. Alrighty.
All right, everyone. That is the year that was the year in old games.
Yeah, that's the best old stuff we played last year.
That's good stuff.
Gosh. 18 days into the new year, I don't know if I played a single fucking... Well, all I've played is old things, I guess, technically. I've played pretty much... Yeah, I played like one new thing, and I can't talk about it yet for another 10 days.
No. All I've played is that game Horus, that super British
Oh yeah, game. I started playing Horus.
Yeah,
I'm a few hours into Horus.
Yeah, the thing, like, I don't think I could possibly love it as much as Stuart Gyp loves it because mm-hmm. I have no memories of playing Jet Set Willy as a kid. I think if I had played Jet Set Willy and Manic Miner growing up, I like this would be hitting my heartstrings hard. As it is merely very, very good.
I enjoy the storytelling of the game.
Yeah, it's better than I thought it was going to be.
I'm at the point where it seems like the game has opened up and I'm kind of exploring the world more and cleaning up trash. And
yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Seems like business has picked up. I haven't gotten to play it in about a week because I've had reviews started to happen again. So
reviews you can't talk about.
Now it's getting, I mean, technically I can talk about Rhythm Fighter, which is pretty cool.
Ooh.
But yeah,
we'll save that for another podcast.
Yeah.
Everyone, thanks a lot for listening.
Tomorrow night.
We'd love to know if there are any old games that you played this past year that you only discovered this year that you fell in love with. So when you see this posted on the social media, please go ahead and leave us a comment and let us know what you think. We have been Tim and Dave, Dave and Tim, for Fat Gatsby, and thanks for listening. Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Oh, shit.